And I remember my first convention. It was at the Sheraton, and they made me one of them official huggers at the door, hugging peoples. And what I found then, there was a lot of love and the fellowship. And I started going to as many meetings as I could. And what I learned about when I started going to meetings, that I suffered with the disease of addiction. You know, that this ain't a drug program, this is a program of recovery. And on the way here, you know, I was telling this addict, you know, I feel good today. Y'all have heard that song by James Brown, I Feel Good. I'm serious, that's how good I feel. Y'all don't want me to hit it one time. No, I ain't gonna do that. But this addict, Jimmy, I met Jimmy last year at the Myrtle Beach Serenity Fest, and when I had them tapes, you know, I used to always say I want to meet this guy. You know, and in November I got a chance to meet him, and I appreciate him, you know, and I like his recovery, I like everything that he shared, you know, and just by meeting him, you know, I love this guy. And I appreciate him being in my life. And a whole lot of other you addicts here. I love the fellowship. Without the fellowship, you know, where else would I be? Well, I know where I'd be. Jails, institution, and death. But I like for Jimmy to come up and show his story. With that, I'll give y'all Jimmy T.
I'm Jimmy, I'm a recovering addict. Before we get started, what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask you to take a moment of silence, right? And I'd ask you to, like, invite your God in. And I'll invite my God in. And then when it's all said and done, the praise and the glory goes to God and not the addict. So if we could do that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. I want to thank God for everything. And when I tell you I want to thank God for everything, I mean I want to thank Him for everything that has ever happened in my entire life. Because everything that I have been through has been a direct result of a merciful God loving me enough to create me and allow me to experience the things I needed to experience to become the man He wanted me to become. I want to thank the Bound for Freedom Convention. I'm not going to say y'all took a risk. I don't believe that y'all took a risk when you invited me to come down and share. And I don't say that with an arrogance. I say that with a humility. I understand that I have time-tested recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. I want to take a moment, right? And I would like for Vito to stand up. And I would like for us to give Vito a round of applause with 42 years clean. I don't say that to separate him and make him any greater or any better than any other addict in here. I say that because if you don't know where your roots are, you're never going to find yourself. And he's clean longer than I'm alive. My sponsor always tells me to come and have fun when I share. So I like to do something. I listen to a lot of hip-hop music, and Petey Pablo happens to be one of my favorites. So I like to start this meeting off with North Carolina, come on and raise up.
Yeah.
I need to tell you that I got an NA sponsor who got an NA sponsor who got an NA sponsor who got an NA sponsor. I go to one fellowship. I serve one God. I have one woman in my life. I serve a God who's so wonderful and merciful in my life that he saw fit to get me on the airplane and bring my wife with me. And that might not mean nothing to you, but my wife would not get on an airplane since September 11th. But because of God's grace and mercy and her love for me, she's with me tonight. And for that, I am grateful. I'm grateful to be invited back to North Carolina. I've been here before. I've been to Myrtle Beach. Some people have heard my story. My story hasn't really changed, but what has changed is my enthusiasm for the recovery process in Narcotics Anonymous. And like I want to tell y'all a story, right? I want to tell y'all a story about this kid that I met. And this kid was born to without a father. Like there was no father in his life, and he was raised with his mom and his sister, and they lived on welfare, and they lived in the projects, man, in Jersey City, New Jersey, and they lived in the ghetto, and they ate the cheese sandwiches, and they didn't really have too much, but like they had each other, but like that didn't seem to be enough. And then this woman, she met this man, and she married this man, and of course this kid didn't like this man because like this man took away his best friend because like the self-centeredness that the triangle of self-obsession talks about, like most kids grow out of their self-centeredness, but like this little boy didn't do that. This little boy was selfish and self-centered and indignant and didn't understand that his moms needed someone to be with. He thought that his mom's job was to be for him and for him only and maybe for his sister, but like this little boy had spent his whole entire life like just wanting to be loved and never knowing how to be loved and coming to places of love and not allowing people to love them. And you know, this little boy was the oldest of four kids, man. And she met this man and he happened to be a police officer, and they kind of moved out of the ghetto and they sort of moved into, you know, they didn't move out of the ghetto. They just moved up to the other side of the ghetto. And, you know, they were like coming up a little bit out of the depths and the despair living in the projects in Jersey City, and they moved to another end. And but like, this little boy never felt like he fit in. This little boy had big ears and hair that was parted to the side, and his mom dressed him in Rough Riders. And you know, the rest of the kids when he was growing up, they were wearing the Dr. J's, you know, the Chuck Taylors, and he wasn't wearing them, man. He was wearing the Woolworth Woolies. I don't know if they got Woolworth down here, but that's like a low-grade Kmart. And he was wearing them sneakers with the plastic soles on them. And you know, kids are cruel, man. They made fun of him, and they called him the little bookworm, and they said, you know, boy, you're the teacher's pet, and how come you always know the answers? Because this little boy had the ability to read books and remember what he read, and he could answer when the teacher asked the question. He could raise his hand, and he knew the answer, and like other kids would make fun of him, so he realized at a young age that it wasn't cool to like know the answer, so he would like to play stupid because it was more important that like he fit in with the fellas and with the girls than it was that he got good grades, even though he knew that when he didn't get good grades, he was going to go home and get his ass waxed. It was still more important to have friends than it was to have the respect of his family. I know y'all can't identify with that little boy, but this little boy, let me tell you about him, man. He was a good athlete, and he used to leave his house at 6 o'clock in the morning, man, and he had dreams, and he had aspirations, man, and he wanted to be something when he grew up, and he was a good ball player. And he was always on the all-star team, and he was always the captain on his team, and he was always the leader on his team, and people used to follow him around and want to be like him, and then like something happened. He went to school every day, and he got these good grades, and he never missed a day, and then he went to high school. And he played ball in high school, and he was still the best kid on the team. But all along, there's like no love in the household. His father's a raging alcoholic who works two jobs, who viciously beats him on a regular basis. And something happens to this little boy in this process, and he goes from this little compliant kid to a rebel. And he's introduced to drugs, and the first drug he's introduced to is alcohol. And he starts drinking, right? And the first night he goes out and he drinks. And he gets drunk, and he comes home and he pukes all over the house. And he goes underneath the cabinet and he thinks he's got Lysol. He's spraying Raid on the rug. And his father comes downstairs, and his father, right, His father says, boy, were you drinking? And he says, no, I wasn't drinking. And boy, I could smell the alcohol. No, you can't smell alcohol. I wasn't drinking. He said, boy, was you drinking? The boy said, no, I wasn't drinking. Dad, I'm telling you, I wasn't drinking. Boy, was you drinking? No, I wasn't drinking. Dad, he said, all right, maybe I had one. And he got punched. See, that little boy didn't get slapped around, man. There was no belt. He got punched. His father knew no other way but to put violence on him. He thought that that would change the way he was. He thought that violence and discipline could change the kid into who he wanted him to be. But the reality was is that love is the most powerful vehicle for that. But his father didn't know that, man. And he went to school, man, and he got grades just to pass. And he played ball, and he had a shot to go to college and play ball. But he got drunk the night before the tryout, and he didn't make the tryout. Therefore, college went away because his folks weren't going to pay for him to go to college. So the only shot he had was this scholarship potential that he had, but he gave that up because it was more important to go out drinking with the fellas. And like he started to endeavor into doing different substances, and he went from this little boy with dreams and aspirations to an addict full-blown. He went from this little boy, man, who had like dreams, man. This little boy had dreams. He wanted to be somebody when he grew up. This little boy did not plan on being an addict or a junkie or a crackhead or a dope fiend or a raging alcoholic or any of those things that were to become in his life. He really had dreams and aspirations, man. And he went out and he used. And in the process of all of this, I might sound like I'm forgetting, but he met this girl at 15 years old. And he met this girl, and he bet his boys that, you know, he bet his boys a Heineken, of course, that he could ask her out. And he drank his two Heinekens, and he had his third Heineken, and he bet his boys that by the end of the night, he would ask this girl out. And he did. He asked this girl out, and he started dating this girl, and he knew that he liked this girl, but he really didn't want to hang out with this girl because she wasn't, like, drinking and partying like he was. So he used to tell her that he had a lot of stuff to do, and she needed to stay home, and she used to be real compliant with that type of stuff. And he used to run the streets, and he used to do all the things that you do when you're a kid and you think you're having fun. And this little boy, he graduated high school, and he got a job, and he got a trade, and he started doing things, man. And he started to blossom into what he perceived to be a man. And he watched a lot of news, man. And back in the early 80s, crack was an epidemic in New York. And he used to watch the news. He used to watch the news, right? And they'd be like, homeboy got robbed for his 8-ball jacket, and homeboy got robbed for his sneakers. And I said, boy, I ain't never going to do that. I will never, ever, ever smoke crack. Never. I ain't doing that. That's a bad thing. I ain't doing that. I ain't shooting dope. Because addicts do that type of stuff. Then one day, somebody put something in a joint, and he smoked it, and he didn't rob nobody's house, and he didn't steal nobody's car, and he wasn't running around the streets looking for things. So he was fooled by the disease of addiction to think that it was okay. And he went on a run, man, and he lost everything he had, and he came to Narcotics Anonymous in April of 1986, and he made one Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and he left the Narcotics Anonymous meeting. He doesn't know what they said at that meeting. He just knows that they told him he couldn't use anymore, and smoking crack was no good, and he knew that. He knew that, and he went to it, and it was a closed Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and his fiance at the time went with him, and they put her in the kitchen because there was no Naranon meeting. And after the meeting, he left his meeting, and his fiance said, Well, how was it? I said, well, it was pretty good. I got all these numbers from all these guys in town, and I could call all these guys, but they told me I can't use anymore. And she said, well, that's great. Well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I'd really like to celebrate. She said, well, let's go to the bar. She didn't know that alcohol was a drug, and I didn't hear them say alcohol was a drug. And so we went to the bar to celebrate the fact that I wasn't using anymore. And I went on another run. And in October of 1987, I found myself homeless, penniless, jobless, and I landed in my first detox. And I went to this detox, man, and I blamed my family for everything. When we sat in those counseling groups, if you've ever been in treatment, you know what I'm talking about. We sat in counseling group, and they said, what's your problem? I said, if you were the only white family in the projects and your pops beat you like my pops beat me, you'd be an addict too. And the counselor would just shake his head and he'd say, boy, you just don't know. And I got out of that treatment center and I used, but I came to meetings, man. I came to meetings because I listened in the treatment center and they said, make meetings. When you get out of here, don't go home and see your fiance. Don't go home and see your parents. Go to a meeting. And I got out of the treatment facility and I went to a meeting. And I went to another meeting, and I went to another meeting, and I went to another meeting, and I started to feel a little bit better about myself, but there was something that was wrong because I felt good on the way to the meeting, and I felt good during the meeting, but after the meeting, I had that empty feeling inside me again, and I didn't know what to do with that feeling. And there's a suggestion, like, on the back of the meeting directory in the state of New Jersey that says, don't use and go to meetings. I had to go to meetings part down. I was there early, and I stayed late. It was the don't use between the two meetings that I was having a hard time understanding. I would leave the meeting and I felt so alone. It felt like nobody understood. And my pops didn't want to talk to me. And my fiance wasn't sure if she liked me. And my moms didn't like me. And I didn't have no job. And like people just didn't seem to be in my corner. You know, because I had 30 days now. You were supposed to stand up and recognize that I had gotten my life together. And you all weren't doing that. And if y'all ain't going to do that, then why the hell am I staying clean? And I don't understand. Like, what do you mean? And I remember saying to my father sitting at the table Thanksgiving Day, that's the day I got out. I said to my father, Dad, I'm really sorry for all the things I did. And he said, you certainly are sorry. Because that's the only way he knew how to deal with the pain. So I used. I'll show him, I'll kill me. And I went to meetings and I used, and I went to meetings and I used, and I went to meetings and I used. I'm quite sure I made more meetings than people that were staying clean. I mean that. I went to 7 to 12 meetings a week, but I couldn't stay clean between meetings. I could not get with the concept not using between the meetings was so important, because if I didn't use between the meetings, then when I went to the meeting, I could actually understand and hear what y'all were trying to tell me I needed to do to get better. And I went back to treatment in 90. In 89, I convinced my fiance to marry me. In 92, or actually October of 1991, I got clean again. I made a couple meetings, I got clean, and in April of 1992, I went on a run. I picked up. I didn't relapse, there was no recovery. There was no active change in my ideas, attitudes, and behaviors. I just didn't use for a period of time. And I picked up April 1st, 1992, and I had an everything must go sale in my house. Now understand something. I was not one of those addicts that used every day when I first got here. And I came here and I heard the old heads talk about they shot dope for 30 years and they had been using for 20 some odd years. And I was like, y'all been using for 20 some odd years. I've been using for like 10 years. So you've been doing for 30 and I got 10 in. That means I got 20 good years of running left before I need to get clean. Because, you know, addicts are not stupid people and we're intellectual by nature. So I figured I had a 20-year run left in me. But the disease said, I don't think so. And the mercy and grace of God said, I know not. So what happened was I went out and I used for that month, man. And I used the whole month of April. I used every single day. I smoked crack. I slept in a bed where there was a shower right next door, and I would not go in the shower because I would not allow myself the opportunity to not get high. I sold everything in my house. I stole my own vehicle. I did everything you could imagine. I'm telling y'all, I stole my own vehicle, because by this point, my wife had had enough. She took my house and car keys away, but she made the ultimate mistake. She gave me a $5 bill and sent me to the store for milk and bread. Milk and bread at home is $3. That means you got $2 left to make a key. I made a key to the truck. She went to work. I went and used. And I used that whole month, man, and I came back. I have 9 years, 11 months, and 20 days clean. I'm 10 days shy of a decade. That kind of like is kind of scarce as opposed to some of the other people in this room tonight in the clean time. But you want to know something? I'm damn proud of how long I've been clean. And I came home. I was in the crack house in Weequahic Park, New Jersey. And if you've been from New Jersey, you know what I'm talking about. I was in the crack spot, right? And I had $200 in my pocket and crack in the other pocket. And the girl running the crack spot said, "Boy, you got to go. Your tweaking ass is driving us crazy. We can't enjoy. I'll get high. You have got to get out of here." I said, "I got drugs and money." She said, "We don't care. When you get thrown out of the crack spot, you really need to take a look at your using. When the people you've been supporting for the last month to get high tell you you got to go, you really have an issue with using." So I came home, I used up the rest of the money and the drugs, and I came home and I was crawling on my floor and I was trying to get some money I had stashed away, and I remember reaching up to the drawer, and I opened the drawer, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, right? And my wife said to me, she said, "What do you want?" And I looked up over the bed and I said, "You know what I want, bitch, where's my money?" She said, "What money?" I said, "You know what money I'm talking about, where's my money?" She said, "Well, Jeff got your money." I said, "Well, it's 4 o'clock in the morning now. Jeff is 6'3", 260, and don't play." I said, "You call Jeff right now. You tell Jeff I'm on my way." I weighed 108 pounds. I had 2 pairs of sweatpants on, underneath my blue jeans, and the belt hole in my belt I made. I was wearing a 28 belt. I made a hole at like 22 and a half. My eyes were sunk in the back of my head, and I told her to call Jeff, tell him I'm coming for my money. And my wife had been telling me for years that I was a junkie and that she couldn't live with me anymore. But on this night, when she told me, I felt it. I had been using for a month and the drugs had ceased to work. They stopped working, man. I'm here to tell you, man, that at some point the drugs are going to stop working. I'm here to tell you that my experience is that at some point your using time is going to be rescinded. You may use drugs and lose clean time and lose more things, but I'm here to tell you that whatever the feeling is you're going through at the particular moment that you feel like you need to use, you are still going to feel after you use it. That's my experience. The drugs ceased to do what they promised me what they would do way back in the day. They didn't work anymore. All the shame, all the guilt, it was still prevalent in my life. I would do a hit and be paranoid for a minute and relive the shame and the guilt that I was living before I did the hit, because God's grace and mercy was so powerful in my life that He said, "No more will this work for you." And my wife, for the first time, actually confronted me. And I was on my way to Jeff's house. And my wife actually stood in front of the door and she said, "You ain't going nowhere. You're not going nowhere." And my wife pushed me and she cornered me in the kitchen in the apartment we were living in at the time. And on the counter was a butcher knife. And I don't know if y'all can identify. I don't know if y'all are as sick as I am. I don't know if y'all went to the depths of despair and degradation and isolation and distrust of others that I went to. I don't know if you went to the same depths. But it doesn't matter, because if you use again, you will. And I leaned on the counter, man, and the disease said, "Boy, go on and stab her. The title to the truck is in the room. You know Paco been trying to buy that truck for the last 3 years. You need another hit. I got your back, boy. I promise you it will be different this time. Just do what I'm telling you to do. I promise you I got your back. If you just do what I want you to do, go on and stab her, because you don't like her and she's just a nuisance in your life." And I just closed my eyes and I said, "If there is a God, please do not allow me to do this, because I don't want to do this." See, the literature in Who's an Addict says there are at least two people, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. See, I'm not one of those addicts that stands at the podium and tells you that my character is one of a liar and a thief, because my character is not of one of a liar and a thief. I have a character of God that I have always had. I just paid more attention to the lower power. And my wife sits here, so you know God prevailed. But it was at that point that she told me the house had been separated. She was taking the inside of the house, and I was getting the outside of the house. I called my pops. I said, "Pop, Dad, Mom, Dad, Pop, listen, man, I need some place to stay." My father said, "If you come on this block, I will shoot you." My father was a cop in Jersey City for 25 years, never pulled his gun once. He was ready to shoot me. And I called a good friend of mine, and I told him I needed help, and he got me into this halfway house, and I went into this halfway house, and I'm going to share part of my story, but I'm going to clear up a lot of it. I'm going to tell you that I went to this treatment facility, and because I chose to use again, all my choices had been rescinded. No longer could I manage my own life. No longer could I make decisions for myself. All my decision-making got me in trouble. So I went to this facility. It was a 90-day spot. I went in here. It was an AA-based facility. And I need to tell you, they made me get an AA home group. I had to go to it every week. I had to get an AA sponsor. I had to get an AA 90-day pin. I had to go to AA meetings all the time because my choices had been rescinded. But all my sponsor kept telling me was, if I just did what they told me to do for 90 days, from that point forward, I had the freedom to go and do whatever it is I wanted to do. And I'm here to tell you that since I had 90 days clean, I have not been back to anything. I ain't turn it off. I got a big mouth, but it ain't that big.
Go, boy.
Let me stop preaching. All right. I ain't holding the mic. Y'all don't want me to do that. I think we need to have another moment of silence, though. Thank you. And I got out of that treatment facility, y'all, and from that day forth, I have seen no reason to go to any other 12-step fellowship other than Narcotics Anonymous. I don't say that to separate us from any other 12-step fellowship. I don't say that because we're better than. But I want you to understand something, man. That God, in His infinite wisdom, in 1935, knew that alcoholics were prominent in the world, but in 1953, he knew that addicts were dying, man. He knew. Listen, I love when I hear people say stuff like, you know, thank God for AA, or if it wasn't for AA, there'd be no NA. That's not true. If you read the literature, it says in the second tradition that this is a God-given fellowship. It tells us that God created us. He used people from the other 12-step fellowship to help us get off our feet and to help us to get from point A to point B. I don't belittle any other 12-step fellowship, but I don't have a drug problem. I never did have a drug problem. I suffer from the disease of addiction. Drugs are not my problem. I suffer from a disease that's mental, physical, and spiritual in nature. And while I'm grateful for the people that came with Jimmy Kay and helped the Narcotics Anonymous to be created, and for all the things that they did, I need to say something, man. We are almost 50 years old. At some point, we need to stand on our own feet. We need to be recognized as a successful fellowship. I hear people all the time say, I got to go to the other fellowship for recovery, and y'all ain't this and y'all ain't that. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, there's a lot of clean time down here in Charlotte, North Carolina this weekend. Don't tell me we can't sponsor people. Don't tell me we can't help folks, man. There's a lot of clean time here. Check this out. And there's a lot of recovery, man. Come to Narcotics Anonymous. Put your personality on the side. Understand that we have literature that's helping us recover from the disease of addiction, man. So I got out of this spot and I got a sponsor, man, an NA sponsor. I didn't write on the suggested readings, who's an addict. We started working the first step. I'd really like to say something, man. I would like all the people with 30 days or less that got the basic text, I would like you to open your basic text to page 18. I want you to open your basic text to page 18. I want you to read the last paragraph on page 18. It tells you to ask yourself some questions like, do I understand that I am not successful as a drug user, man? Because before we work any steps, there's step zero, which is not using, no matter what, coming to meetings on a regular basis, getting a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor, and getting an NA home group. You hear a lot of stuff like there's no must in NA. I'm sorry to break your little heart, but there's 64 in the basic text and 73 and it works. How and why? There's a lot of musts in the literature, man. You must not use in order to stay clean. See, we come here and we want to fit the program to our lives when the reality is that we need to fit our lives into the program of Narcotics Anonymous, man. It's not about adopting Narcotics Anonymous to me. It's about adopting me to Narcotics Anonymous so I can learn to live this new way of life that's promised to me in the fifth tradition. See, because people read, they read what they want to read. The message is not that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use drugs, and that's it. It says find a new way to live. I come tonight to talk about finding a new way to live. I want to talk about coming here, man. There's three positions in Narcotics Anonymous. There's preparing for the storm, walking through the storm, and preparing for the next storm. I know you might not have been in one yet, but I'm telling you that it's coming. The storm is coming. You better hold on. You better ride the pink cloud all you can, because listen to something. Understand something about a merciful God. God in his infinite mercy and wisdom. I know y'all heard there's no tests in here, but in the 11th tradition, and it works how and why, it says that the program is a living testimony to Narcotics Anonymous. There's no testimony without a test. And God can't use you until he tests your character to make sure you fit what it is he's designed to use you for. Because God got a plan for you, and it might be like to come to Narcotics Anonymous and speak at Maine meetings on Saturday nights in Charlotte, North Carolina. It might be to sponsor 100 men or 100 women. It might be to just be a home group member. But understand, whatever his purpose is for you, it's a very, 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 very important purpose, because nobody's better than anybody else. We started working steps, man, and we got into the steps immediately. And I can remember telling my sponsor, can I get 6 months? He says, your track record says you can't get 6 days. I said, but so-and-so wrote on who's an addict and you sponsor so-and-so. He said, boy, you ain't so-and-so. I said, well, so-and-so did, what is NA? He said, you ain't so-and-so. I said, well, what are we going to do? He said, we're going to work the steps. I said, the steps? Can I wait a year? He said, hell no. He said, ask yourself this question. When you go to the doctor and you tell the doctor what your symptoms are, when you go to the doctor and you tell the doctor that you got a cough and that your lungs are hurting and that when you're sneezing, your nose bleeds, and when you tell him all of the symptoms of your ailment, when he gives you the antidote to your ailment, does he tell you to wait 6 months, or does he tell you to take your now ass to the pharmacist, get the script filled, and start getting better right now? We read it in every meeting. It says the sooner we face our problems in everyday living, just that much faster that we become acceptable, responsible, productive members of society. You're damn straight. I know the literature. I brought it with me, but I don't need to open the books. And if you want to know why I brought my books, because I never went to the crack house without the push of the lighter or the stem. So why would I not come here with the proper tools? And I read all the Narcotics Anonymous literature. I'm not just in the basic text. My recovery is no longer basic. And if you want your recovery to remain basic and you just want to stay in the basic text, then stay there. Don't tell the jokers coming in behind you that the basic text was all you needed. Thank God Vito, back in 1965, didn't say the little white book was all he needed. He was open to change. He was open to the basic text being created. Y'all need to be open to the new literature. The most powerful vehicle against the disease of addiction is knowledge. And the new literature tells us about that stuff, man. The first step, I know what a lot of jokers are afraid of. They might have to change again. They've become accustomed to being where they're at. They're like comfortable in their position. They've been here for 10 years or 12 years or 15 years or 30 years, and they think they've changed enough, but the disease is progressive. The disease is, for every step you take, the disease takes two steps. For every spiritual principle you practice, the disease combats with two defects of character. In the first step, in the new step working God, it talks about resignation versus surrender. It says resignation is when we admit that we're addicts but have yet to accept recovery as the solution to our problem. It says, on the other hand, surrender is when we've accepted that we're addicts and understand that recovery is the solution to our problem. See, it's about change, man. I don't want you to read the new literature because you hear me talk about it. I want you to read the new literature because your spirit has been awoken to a position where you want to grow. More will be revealed, says our willingness to grow spiritually keeps us buoyant. See, I have a spiritual dilemma. My disease is spiritual in nature, man. And yeah, I heard Hot Neef last night. People tell me, boy, Dixie's spiritual. I don't think I'm spiritual. I know I'm spiritual. I'm not a spiritual giant, but I sure as hell got a giant spirit. People are sitting in the audience talking about, he's preaching. You're goddamn straight. You need to know what the word means before you use the word. The word preacher means a teacher of the word. The speaker in Narcotics Anonymous is charged with the responsibility of carrying the word of Narcotics Anonymous. So if I am preaching the word of NA, I should be entitled to. And I would come back from relapses and people would tell me it was okay, you're back. It is not okay to use. This is not okay, Anonymous. Every time you tell an addict who's struggling to stay clean that it's okay that they use, you are justifying and condoning that behavior. You don't know if God will spare them one more day. We need to start directing people to the literature and the first step. People always, I hear them say, I use, my sponsor directed me to recovery and relapse. Boy, you use because you were lacking in a first step. Recovery and relapse is the chapter you should have read before you use, not after you use. It's a preventive chapter. If you read, check this out, it comes after the 12 steps. Picture this, that means it's a preventive chapter from us getting locked and loaded in the fixed idea that now we're 12-step members, therefore we should know better and live better and be better because we think that now we have enough information about the disease that we no longer have to practice principles in our lives because now we've developed a relationship with God. But God sent you here. So I got this sponsor, man, and I love this guy.
All right.
right next to my wife and kids, I love that man the most in the world. And I know there's a lot of y'all saying, that's kind of cool, he got folks. And I do. But he never counted me out. My folks counted me out. He never counted me out. He guided me through the 12 steps. He encouraged me to do this type of stuff. I can remember it was May 21st, 1992 in Eatontown, New Jersey, and may God be pleased with his almighty spirit. There was a brother at the podium, and I was in the back of the room. I had 21 days clean, right? And there was a brother at the podium, and he was talking about the general. Y'all know who I'm talking about, Jamil. And he was talking about marching to the general. And it was talking about marching to the general. And y'all were doing the same thing you're doing right now. Y'all were going, yeah, that's right. Y'all had smiles on your face. And y'all were feeling what the brother was saying. And I can remember being in the back of the meeting feeling like I would never, ever get clean. But I can remember the Spirit of God saying, someday, boy, someday you're going to do that. Someday, boy, you're going to get to touch people like you see him touching people. And check this out. I heard that today may be my day. See, lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise. We all bound for freedom. But there's some stuff that's got to happen, man, for freedom. Freedom ain't free. Abstinence does not equal freedom. You got to compromise and sacrifice everything you've ever known about living to endure and get some freedom. Because freedom comes at a price, man. And listen, understand something. I've been in the storm since I had 18 months clean. I'm 10 days shy of 10 years. I have been in the storm. I have not gotten a moment's reprieve from the storm because God understands and knows that my spirit is strong enough through his grace and his mercy that no matter what might happen, that I will be all right and that I will come here and I will let y'all know that no matter what, you never, ever, 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 ever have to use again. I want to talk about the storms I've been in, man. Like you come here and you hear a lot of stuff in Narcotics Anonymous. Like when you hear somebody share something that you might think you might like, ask them where they got it from. They probably made some of it up. I'm going to step on toes. No major decisions for the first year. Everything I did in my first year was a major decision. I can remember trying to get clean and not wanting to make love to my wife because I wanted to have a baby, but I had to get a year because I couldn't make a major decision to have a baby. But my sponsor said, where does it say that? Show me that. Some joker made a major decision in the first year, used, came back, shared that shit, it caught on like cancer. No relationships in the first year. Literature don't say that either. Literature says, those of us who have found this program and worked the steps build relationships. There's four mandatory relationships in your first year. It's with sponsor, it's with a home group, it's with God, and it's with yourself. They're mandatory relationships in Narcotics Anonymous. And it don't have to be God in the first year. It could be the higher power, as long as it's not a plant or a chair. I have people say, my higher power is the plant. Okay. That works. That's great, but I need something that I can rely on, something that's not going to die, something that can't be crushed in a storm, something that's everlasting. I need some sort of power that I can count on in the deepest, darkest moments. But we made love, and my wife got pregnant, and we had this little girl, man, and we named her Ashley Marie, and she looked like me, she looked like me. I don't mean a little bit. Listen, if she was standing next to me, you would not be able to deny her as my child. The difference between me and her, she got hair. That's it. We got the same personality. We walk alike. We talk alike. But it's scary. But we had this little girl.
My name is DC and I'm an addict. Welcome again to the workshop, Change or Die. And our first speaker will be Barry Kay.
I'm Barry, I'm an addict.
Hey, Barry.
I got stuck with this, y'all. Who wants to go first, everybody? Not me. So, but I was always the first in that methadone line. I was the first in that dope line. So, you know, why not? I'm grateful to be here. I had the opportunity when Kelly asked me about, he had a list of workshops, and Change or Die caught my eye. I remember the first time I heard about Change or Die, I was on a methadone program. And my counselor at the time was a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm sitting there trying to get my doses jacked up, running those games on her. And she's wanting to decrease me, wanting to get me off this methadone. And I want to, but I don't. I'm scared. And she said, and she saw that fear in my eye. You know, I mean, it was like, it was blatant. It was real easy. And she said, Barry, you don't have to worry. You don't have to change but one thing. I said, what's that? She said, everything. And what I'm grateful for, a lot's changed, but I didn't have to do it but a day at a time with y'all's help. And what I had to stop doing was using drugs. And, you know, I got pissed off at a meeting the other night, and this is my shit. You know, of course I'm speaking, so it's my shit. But I heard somebody, some newcomer with 30, 60 days clean, and they were scared, and somebody told them the first year is a gift. That's the biggest crock of shit I have ever heard in my life. You know, getting clean was the hardest thing I ever did in my life. If you're in your first year, you're scared, you want to get high. How can this be a gift when I wanted to get high every day in my first 99 months? You know, I figured out who started that rumor about the first year being a gift. Some asshole with 3 or 4 years wanting to sound like he knows a little something. So he tells that person who picks up a year, oh, this is a gift, now it's time to get busy. You know, it's not every day, you know, is a gift. But what I had to do to change, y'all told me I couldn't think my way into better living. I had to live my way into better thinking. That kind of, I didn't understand what they meant by that. But the process of the 12 steps, I've changed dramatically. And I'm going to tell you the areas I've changed. And I still think like a dope fiend. I'm an addict every day. I think like a dope fiend. I want to get over on y'all. I want to get over on everybody. I want what I want. I want a free ride. The world still owes my ass a living. But through the 12 steps, I've accepted that's not reality. You know, and it's okay for me to think like that, but I don't have to act like that. You know, another one of y'all's little, y'all got a lot of bumper stickers and shit up in here that helped me a lot. And another one is, besides that, you know, well, when I first heard that Change or Die, it was a little bit longer. And it had a couple of, Change or Die motherfuckers, what they use a lot. And if that offends you, for the females, they used to say, Change or Die, bitch. You know, that's not, you know, it was that, work the steps. If you don't want to be here, go use. I used to whine about, see, y'all told me it was okay. My sponsor told me, Barry, you know, you can share, but don't share about something unless you feel like using or you got an experience in it. And I didn't have any experience because I hadn't worked any steps. So I learned how to play that because, see, I like to hear the sound of my own voice. You know, and so I'm Barry, I'm an addict. You know, I really feel like using today. And this was kind of an MO for me. I share that a lot. Finally, somebody pulled me over after the meeting and said, God damn, how much you need to go cop? I'll buy you some dope. I quit sharing that. Because here's the deal. I didn't want to go use because my ass would have went and wouldn't use if I wanted to go use. What I wanted to do was I wanted to get it up off of me. I wanted to talk about it. addicts who want to use go and use. That's right. We don't sit around and talk about it.
That's right.
But saying I had that desire, that obsession to use, I shared it with y'all. Y'all took some of that pain away. And I never had to pick up. You know, I came in here on a long-ass run. You know, shooting dope and being on methadone for 8 years and you know, the jails and institutions. And I get here, and I don't know about anybody else, but, you know, I didn't have a bottom. I lived on a bottom. My bottom was getting up. I didn't have a trigger. My trigger was waking up. But I got here, and I ain't never had a job. My first legitimate job was in Narcotics Anonymous after a year clean. I never worked. This is a little sidebar. I got something in the mail the other day about from the Social Security Administration, and they showed me my work history for the past 25 years, and they put how much you made each year. Zip, 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 zip. Recovery, 1989, you know, $500. And it's gotten a little bit better, but, you know, no, I work today. You know, I've got a career. When I got here, my career, I was one of those real slick drug dealers. You know, I kept selling them undercover agents. So I decided it's probably time for me to get a legitimate job. And, you know, I've got that today. But I get here, and I'm scared of change, right? Okay, I'm broke. Never had a bank account. Never had a checking account. Never had a credit card. Oh, I had checks, but they wasn't mine. And I had credit cards, and they wasn't mine. But, I, you know, nowhere to stay. I'm staying where people let me. Me and my girl, you know, we're just like using each other. Not a lot of love there. I had cases. I traded my raggedy-ass pickup truck to the dope man for a package. So now I'm walking, right? And y'all told me, well, Barry, you got to change and you can't use drugs. My first reaction was, what, and give all this up? I don't know. You know, my self-esteem was so low, I had to prop it up with an overinflated ego. And I think a lot of us come in there talking loud because we feel so bad about ourselves inside. You know, and I share this, and a lot of people don't like hearing this because maybe they don't have a lot of clean time, but it was fine. I was 5 years clean, working steps before I felt really okay with who I am. You know, and I'm talking about, you know, I still go to meetings just about every day. But getting a sponsor, working these steps, writing them out, trying to practice them, around 5 years clean, I got to be okay with who I was. You know, it got better each month as I didn't use. But, you know, change is, like the book says, change is gradual, and recovery is an ongoing process. And change is real slow for me. See, y'all will see change in me before I do. You know, a lot of times newcomers, I'll say, damn, I've seen a lot of change in you. And they'll still have that obsession to use, or they'll be miserable, and they don't see it. But the fact is, we're showing up to meetings, and we're not using drugs, we're changing. Yeah. You know, I can't think my way into better living. I have to live my way into better thinking. You know, I can't adapt my life to the program. I have to adapt the program to my life. You know, all these things, and you know, I ain't never had an original thought in my life, y'all. You know, anything you hear me say, if you don't like it, it's y'all's fault because I got it from y'all. You know, never had an original thought. I'll hear somebody else share something. I go, yeah, I like that. I'll glom onto that, and I'll make that real. And what I thought at 90 days clean has changed dramatically at 6 months clean. What I thought was the truth at 6 months clean is different at a year clean. What I thought I knew at 5 is different at 10. And it gets different each year I stay clean. You know, the text tells me everything I know is subject to revision, especially what I know about the truth. See, there's my truth, there's y'all's truth, and somewhere in between's truth. I'm sitting here, I'm checking my watch out, because I still suffer from this addiction, and one of my addictions is obsessive relationships. And my girl was supposed to meet me here. I think she's my girl this week. I don't know. She calls me last night from up in Fayetteville. She's on her way back to Charlotte. She calls me like 5:30 this morning. I'm going to try to be there, baby. I promise, but blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I'm hitting the sale. I'm burning her phone up. I'm burning mine up. And I'm trying to control something. Guess what? I got no control over nothing. But that don't mean my ass don't try. You know, the sooner I let go of control, the more I change. The sooner I know that I need to change. Because, see, I don't think I need to change a lot of times. I think y'all need to change. If y'all change and do what you're supposed to do, then I'm cool. I ain't got no problem. The only time I have a problem with acceptance is when y'all ain't doing the shit I think y'all ought to be doing. You know, I don't know. I can't. You know, you hear that thing. We used to do a lot of gratitude meetings when I got clean, and we've kind of gotten away from that. But sometimes they ask me to chair a meeting, and I'll do a gratitude meeting. And, you know, we'll set in the book, if we'd have written down what we expected out of Narcotics Anonymous when we got here, we'd have sold ourselves short.
That's right.
I got stuff I never dreamed of. I mean, I've got, you know, I'm riding down the road thinking about, my biggest problem is this relationship, which, you know, shit. They're always a problem. This is my biggest problem. And I want to overlook the home I own, my bank account. I don't have the police kicking my door down at 3 in the morning anymore. You know, I've got a career. You know, I feel good about who I am. But what do I want to do? This disease wants me to focus in on whatever negative aspect in my life and forget all the beauty.
Yeah.
And you know what? That hit me. I said, man, you ain't got to do this shit. Look at what you got today.
Right.
And when I get in the solution, I start feeling better.
Yeah. That's right.
But I have to turn it over. You know, that third step means a lot.
Yeah.
It says in our step working guide, the whole essence of the third step is turning it over and over and over and over and over again. Because I'll turn it over, snatch it back, turn it over, snatch it back. Today I'm learning to leave it there. If I want the pain, all I got to do is go scoop it up. It's there. It ain't going nowhere. It's just like the dope. The dope ain't going nowhere. I'm going to share this. I lost obsession to use drugs at 9 months clean. And that was when I got through doing a fourth and fifth step. I went over that fifth step with my sponsor and got, let me tell you, the angels didn't sing and I didn't see any burning bushes and it wasn't nothing like that. I said, I'm just glad this damn four steps over with. And during the forthcoming months, I started feeling better about myself. But that's when I lost that obsession to use drugs. And I have not had it since. And I buried my mom. Both my brothers have been murdered. I got in a fight at an NA convention a few years ago. One of my prouder moments. Guess what? That was over. A relationship. I know a lot of y'all say, well, he'll use now. Fuck y'all. There's no excuse to use. I don't care what it is, it passes. If you're sitting on top of the world, this is going to pass. If you're miserable and you're thinking about using, this will pass. If you think you got problems now, go do some dope. If you don't think it's about the dope, go copy some. If you got resentments because people don't say do what you want them to do in here, or all that talk about God, if them resentments run your ass out of here, that dope will run you back in. If you make it. I picked up one white chip, and I don't say this, you know, to pat myself on the back. I tell you this, in case you're here and you're new and you've only picked up one. Relapse is not even a part of this program. It's a part of this disease. It's a part of this disease. It happens, but it ain't got to happen. I know a lot of people that's picked up one white chip. I know a lot of people that's used, and they're dead right now. I buried a bunch of them. I work for the Department of Corrections. I see addicts every day on my job in some medium and some closed custody prisons doing 20, 30-year sentences, y'all, that used to be in these rooms, in these conventions. Guess what? The ass got cured. They don't need it. They don't need NA no more. And now they're up there, man, I wish I could go to them meetings again. Well, if you're here, stay here. Thank you all for letting me share.